From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of July, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And later on this Friday afternoon, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the House Committee on Agriculture has approved a version of the Farm Bill. The Secretary of Agriculture has announced a three-pronged adjustment to the disaster relief programs, and the Asian Development Bank has cut its growth estimates for most of the world, including the United States. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories, and it all happens right here on the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. July contract and the soft red winter wheat. Settlement price there at $8.42, up 9.25 cents. The hard red at $8.37 in Kansas City was 16 cents higher on the day. Back in Chicago for the corn pit, nearby contract a loss today, down 15.5 cents. Final price and settlement there at 7.55¾. September futures up 7 cents at the day, 7.38¼. December contract at 7.38, up 5¾. And December futures at 7.38, up December up five and three quarters. And March contract 7.36¾, up 2¼. May corn at 7.40, up 7¼. July futures 7.33½, up 4¾. And December of next year at $6.20, up 1¾. July beans on the day $16.42, up 16¼ cents. August at $15.94½, up 22. September beans $15.71½, up 26. And November at $15.54, 25 higher. January soybeans at $15.50, up 24. The May contract at $14.47½, up 17¼. And the November of 2013 at $13.19, up 23¾. Bean meal $11.10 higher at $489.90. And bean oil at $53.57, 42 cents higher on the day. Live cattle futures finished the October at $121.45, down 20 cents. September feeders at $142.14. That's $1.97½ lower on the day. And the August lean hogs at $90.40, down $1.87½. You are listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $87.21 a barrel, up $1.13. Ethanol at $2.56.7. That's 5 cents higher on the day. Natural gas $2.87.4 unchanged. The heating oil at $2.79.4, up 2½ cents. And the gold futures for the day, $1,591.60 an ounce, up $26.70. The U.S. dollar trading at 83.34. That's down 0.31 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 293.90, 3.63 higher. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the National Weather Service in Urbana-Champaign this afternoon. A 20% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly sunny, a high of 91 degrees. And then this evening, a 20% chance of showers continues, thunderstorms as well, mostly cloudy, and a low of 67 degrees. As we look forward to tomorrow, 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high of 89, south-southwest winds at 5 to 8, and Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 69 degrees, south-southwest winds at 7 miles an hour, Sunday mostly sunny and a high of 91, and Sunday night, partly cloudy and a low of 72. On Monday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 92, and Monday night, partly cloudy, and a low of 74. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the folks out at the Illinois State Water Survey. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On the phone line from Lafayette, Indiana, is Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting to take up the futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Mike. How are you today?
Doing great. It sounds like you came over this way to see what the drought really looked like earlier this week at Purdue, huh, Tom?
Well, I did. Yeah, I spent 3 days over there, and you know that there are places that look good and not many, honestly, and places that look really, really bad. And I got a note from the home crew earlier today near New Holland, which is to the west of Lincoln, I think about 10 miles or so. And probably they could be really good soils, but it's more likely that they might be closer to some sandy things. The note said five fields, 35,000, let's see, was it 35,000 population, and they expected to go 39 bushels to the acre.
Yeah, that sounds right. I was talking to clients near Bloomington, same scenario, and they're actually cattle guys that are probably going to be chopping now to try and get with it, whatever they can for silage.
Well, yeah. It's turned really ugly, and this is what happens, you know, I suppose, in drought. It turns really ugly really fast. It's been over a couple-week period. The 100-degree weather didn't help, but the dry weather has just been really hard on the crop, and it's spreading pretty widely throughout the Midwest. I suppose we could be in danger in other parts of the world, too.
I think that's right, and I think the other thing that goes back to what you just talked about as far as how dry in this past week, you know, we were supposed to cool off, quote-unquote, and lose some of the upper 90s, and these higher temperatures came right back on us this later part of the week. And I think that's where, even though the midday GFS model was probably a little wetter than the morning for days 7, 8, 9, and 10, I wonder how much good that's even going to do by the time we get to days 7, 8, 9, and 10 if these models can continue to underrate and underscore the temperatures and call the temperatures too low. And one of the consultants I work with was saying to me three days ago when we were in the Watseka area together that we were looking at probably models that could not adjust to such a record drought and such dry soils, and that's why they were underplaying the temperatures. And so it looks like that this weekend is probably going to be the best shot that we're going to have for another 2 to 3 weeks, given what kind of temperatures we're going to have to contend with.
Hey, I wasn't paying enough attention. Did the July contracts go off the board today?
They did indeed, and the July corn stayed down about 15 and a quarter, and we saw the July migrate towards the September. July beans actually stayed up 16 cents and went off the board at 16.42. So you've got quite a spread between both July beans and August beans and July corn and September corn. And I think that's where next week when we come back, especially after Sunday night's trade, we'll want to watch that cash basis very, very closely because it widened out today, and that was one of the factors, I think, playing into the markets not doing as well, given it was a weather weekend Friday day of trade.
Yeah, so just 17 cents difference in the corn from the July to the September as they went off the board, and then pretty good size difference, what, more than 50 cents?
Yeah, a little over 50 cents in the beans. And you know, the wheat settled up just perfectly, 8.42 on the July, and we're going to close out probably around 8.46 on the September. I think the Sunday night trade is probably going to be the most important from a standpoint of the weather. The way I see it right now, and we talked about this a little bit off air, was that if we're going to get some kind of a move up now, and because I think we probably killed the corn crop at least once, and we haven't killed the bean crop yet, I would think that if the rains are disappointing this weekend, Todd, the beans would really start to show their strength and lead the market higher. And I think that especially given that we've returned back to a risk-on rally in the outside markets with the dollar down about 0.5%, crude oil jumping back up about 1.5%, and the metals, especially the copper, one of the big key factors in the soybean market, copper up 2.5% today. So I think you've got a couple things working in your favor when we come back Sunday night that the beans should be the leader to the upside. If they're not, then you really start to wonder how much premium we've got in this market and what's going on. The market's not taking us higher.
From the outside market, Italy has appeared to be back in trouble again. Is that causing much concern in the commodities, or are they just focused on the weather?
Yeah, you know, we have this parallel trade with the outside markets, and sometimes we get real close in terms of the parallel, and sometimes we get quite divided in the parallel trade with the outside markets. We're quite divided now because the media is talking a lot about the drought. the media is going to be talking a lot more about the drought and the food companies next week. Several of my media contacts in Chicago that I was speaking with this week have said they're preparing stories to talk about the agricultural economy in the future, talk about the food companies, how they're going to handle this drought, what it means to the retail sector. So we'll probably get our heaviest hit of media in terms of this and what's happening to us on the farm probably next week. And so there again, that kind of works into the mindset that we're probably going to stay divorced from the outside markets for a little bit more. But I would say by the end of August, 1st of September, we're probably going to have to come back in and start looking at the outside markets more and more.
What do you see further down the road as we get into August and then September?
Well, I think this week, when the report came out so sharply lower in terms of supply, not just corn and beans, but wheat also, I think what we're going to see here, Todd, is the likelihood that the highs will come earlier rather than later because we've gotten a lot of bullishness out. And like we are talking about, the media will come out and talk even more about it, and the demand side will continue to suffer. So I'm trying to split my mind up into a three-week horizon of weather trading and then a three-month horizon of protecting that fall crop insurance price. I will say this. I think that the data that has come out, and the Asian Development Bank put out a wonderful report, very short, wonderful report about Asia's growth in the second half of 12 and the first half of 13, really cutting some of the numbers back in terms of growth potential because of Europe and Italy and things like you're talking about. I think that works well with the idea of protecting the crop insurance, protecting the lost demand, and protecting the downside once we get through this and as we go through this three-week time period.
Yeah. So is it most likely that if we're really short cropping, and we're obviously going to be short corn, that prices up front will be higher than they are as we get closer to January, February, March, April, May, and then as we get into that new year and we have probably what would be a very big planted acreage for corn?
I think the futures market especially. I wouldn't say that for the cash market because in 89 we kept going higher into the early winter of 89 for the average farm price received. Even after the drought, farmers obviously didn't have a lot, and what they had they held tight. So basis continued to tighten into the 89, early 89 time period as the futures market broke. I think that's a great mindset or rule of thumb to keep in mind for what we're dealing with right now. You asked a question earlier this week that I thought was a huge question. What is the natural hedge out there? And I think always when it comes to drought, the basis is your natural hedge. You don't know what you're actually going to have in terms of yield. But if you have a bad yield, it's likely the rest of your community is going to have a bad yield. That should show up most in the basis, and that's where that basis should become more and more important to the producer as time goes on.
So pay attention to what's happening in Chicago, but watch your local basis.
Exactly, especially since a lot of the basis, even in the Champaign County area, even in Tippecanoe County here, our basis is still underneath in terms of fall basis, still underneath the three-year average. And I think the only reason that is because the futures market is rallying so sharply. If we would come off these highs, I think we'd be well above the three-year average fall basis.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
I think that'll do it, sir. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. Thanks so much. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
If you'd like to hear Mike again, you can always do it in two ways, willag.org or dial this number, 333-3434. Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, is here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the House Agriculture Committee has approved a five-year farm and nutrition bill. The House legislation would save $3.5 billion a year from current spending levels, with $1.6 billion coming from tightening rules for food stamp beneficiaries. It would also end the practice of direct payments for non-active farmers. The House bill differs from its Senate counterpart, by preserving a price support program that pays farmers when prices fall below certain levels. The House measure gives farmers a choice between the price support program and a taxpayer-paid revenue protection program that is included in the Senate bill that compensates farmers for modest revenue losses before crop insurance kicks in. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack announced a three-pronged adjustment to disaster relief programs, which will target disaster designations, emergency loan rates, and rental payments for Conservation Reserve Program acres used for emergency hay and grazing. Counties labeled by the U.S. Drought Monitor as in a severe drought for eight consecutive growing season weeks or in an extreme drought for any amount of time in the growing season will automatically receive a secretarial designation as disaster areas. County and state emergency boards will also be able to bypass governor initiations of the disaster designation and submit requests directly to USDA. The Asian Development Bank trimmed its economic forecast for the U.S., the Eurozone, and developing economies in Asia. The bank says it expects the Eurozone economy to contract 0.7% this year. The Eurozone is expected to grow by 0.8%. It has also revised down its forecast for U.S. economic growth in 2012 to 1.9% from its previously projected 2% growth. Strategic Grains downwardly revised its estimate for the European Union's 2012-13 grain harvest by 2.4 million metric tons to 278.8 million tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program you can find on our website at willag.org after about 6 o'clock this evening. In fact, probably a little earlier. We're recording about 3:15 today because I have an event this evening to get to in Springfield. Our guest will be Rich Nelson of Allendale in studio with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agriculture. Now, up next, as Dave just told you, you know, things have been moving really quickly in Washington, D.C. as it relates to the Farm Bill. In the following report, I talk with Todd Davis, senior economist for the American Farm Bureau Federation. The conversation starts with me asking him about the differences between the two bills. Todd Davis says it comes down to the PLC.
Well, the House Farm Bill proposal has a program called the Price Loss Coverage, which is a reference price program where when the five-month average, marking your average price, falls below the reference price, there's going to be a payment made. There was nothing similar to this in the Senate version. And the rice and peanut producers felt that the shallow loss program in the Senate just didn't provide adequate coverage for their risks. And so they were looking for something that would help them cover their production costs, their higher production costs, especially peanuts. And so they looked at this reference price as providing the risk management protection that they need.
Under the Senate version, those producers would suffer heavily, probably because the asset value that they have in their land would drop based off a precipitous drop in the size of government payments. Will this compromise make it through the process, in your opinion?
Well, I think another clarification in the Senate bill is that the Senate bill is built around crop insurance, and rice and peanuts feel like they do not have adequate crop insurance alternatives like the RP products that are available in the Midwest. So that's what they feel, that price loss coverage provides this as a revenue protection. Now, it does, by having the price loss coverage in the House bill, the compromise was to remove the farm level coverage in the revenue loss coverage, the Shall Loss Program. So it does sort of change the dynamics of the risk protection that's provided through the Shall Loss coverage in the House version as compared to the Senate. And as far as will it survive, that's the million-dollar question. I think they're marking up the bill as we speak, and there hasn't been a lot of foreshadowing on what's going to be coming in the amendments.
That's American Farm Bureau Federation senior economist Todd Davis. I spoke to him earlier this week at the Purdue Top Farmer Crop Workshop.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line to take up the cash grain market with us is Bruce Bostard. He's at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois, and helps to manage more than, I think, 10, probably closer to a dozen now, elevators across central Illinois. How many actually in the co-op today?
10.
10? Okay. Yep. I stand correct. We'll stay with 10. So I've got a question for you, and I hope you can help me out, because oftentimes we've been talking about natural hedges, which means that producers, when they have less grain to sell, have a higher price, and that tends to make up for the lack of number of bushels trying to even out. It doesn't quite usually make it, but gets closer to evening out what the income on the farm might be, but it seems to me that an elevator would be in a much more difficult position because it's about number of bushels through, I think, and then there's not as much difference in the basis, which is where you make your money. Is that right?
An elevator is basically totally volume driven.
Right.
A huge percent of our numbers are fixed cost. Even if you laid everybody off, sent everybody home, turned off the lights, and killed the power bill, between taxes and depreciation and insurance, you end up with a big chunk of your monthly income goes out the door on that anyway.
Right. So have you talked to folks who went through 88 and a few other years that were pretty rough on what happens in the elevator systems?
You eat into working capital because you take losses in those years. You know, the bottom line is that's why you want to go in with a substantial amount of working capital. Our lenders have, you know, covenants on that, and we have a lot more than what our covenant requirements are. So you can take some of those bad years, eat into your working capital, and, you know, kind of keep your head down and keep going.
All right. Well, it'll be an interesting year for you, and I know you'll be pushing the pencil hard where you are. Right?
Yes.
So tell me about the area. How dry, how bad at this point in Ludlow, which is north of Champaign?
Beans look better than they have any right to be, but beans are always kind of a weed that if you can keep them alive until August and get a rain, you have a chance of doing something. Corn, we went for a long time getting a rain just at the last possible second, but those quit coming. We looked better than we had any right to be until the 4th of July or the day after, and then we just kind of drove off a cliff.
What's basis like today?
Basis improved quite a bit on the new crop. We've seen this old crop and new crop come together as we've seen the area concern change. So we went from a 41 over a week ago on nearby corn to 34 over the SEP today. But new crop has gone from 13 under the Dease, historically real tight basis a week ago, to 6 under tonight. So that's a market out there that's looking for bushels. Bean side nearby went from 19 over the August to 23 over, so we picked up 4 cents there and dead steady on the new crop.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Okay. Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Back with the weather in 2 minutes.
It's National Ice Cream Day. It's also National French Fries Day. As early as the 1680s, potatoes were fried in the Spanish Netherlands. French fry recipes began showing up in U.S. cookbooks as early as 1813, but date back in French cookbooks to at least 1755. On this day in agricultural history in 1568, the dean of St. Paul's Cathedral developed a method to bottle beer. In 1779, William Headley was born, an English coal mine official and inventor. He was probably the first to build a commercially viable steam engine dependent on friction between the wheels and rails, as opposed to a geared track. In 1794, James Lynn died. Lynn was a Scottish physician who recommended that fresh citrus fruit and lemon juice be implemented in the seamen's diet to eliminate scurvy. Sir Gilbert Blane made Lynn's suggestion a requirement, and scurvy was eradicated in the British Navy. By the way, the Dutch had been using citrus to combat scurvy since at least 1594, two centuries earlier. And in 1937, the first Krispy Kreme donut was sold in Salem, North Carolina. The first donuts went to grocery stores, but it was not long before people began stopping by Vernon Rudolph's donut operation and asking for hot donuts to go. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's Friday afternoon. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, state climatologist in the Prairie Research Institute, is with us to take up the weather forecast for the weekend. Let's, Jim, start with how dry it is across the state of Illinois at this point by comparison to usual.
Yes, if you look at all across Illinois, we've been much below normal for this time of year, for not only this month, but last month as well. And in fact, the U.S. Drought Monitor has expanded drought conditions pretty much all across the entire state is in some form of drought, either moderate to severe or even extreme drought in far southern Illinois. So very dry across the state at this point in time.
How often when we're this dry do we actually turn the spigot back on quickly and catch up with rainfall?
You know, it's really tough to do in the summertime because even with normal precipitation, you know, it rains about an inch a week, but we would use up an inch or more of water per week just to keep things going to where they are right now. So that an inch a week would just keep things from getting any worse. It really wouldn't cause any improvement. We probably need a good 6 inches or more over a month time period to really kind of break the cycle. And even then, it's too late for a lot of the corn crop.
And I suspect none of that is in the offing in the near term.
That's right. If you look at the forecast, it's more of the same, warmer than normal conditions. So I expect to see highs in the low 90s, not as hot as it was a week or two ago, but still on the warm side. And lows in the upper 60s, low 70s. There's a slight chance of rain today and tomorrow, but the odds are pretty slim and the amounts are pretty small. There's a few specks on the radar right now in the northwest part of the state, but I don't really expect us to see anything significant out of this event or in anything that's on the horizon at this point. There's really nothing out there to point towards is saving us from this particular drought.
And humidity levels have been extremely low?
Yeah, they have. You know, the dew points have been in the 60s, which is a little drier for us than you know, usually it's in the mid to upper 70s right now on the dew point, so very much more of a sweltering experience like we had last year. But with the surface being as dried out as it is, there just isn't as much moisture in the atmosphere, and that's the problem. We've got everything so dried out in the atmosphere right now that it lowers our chances of rain, and even if we get rain, we don't get much out of it.
As you look across the planet, do you see things that are happening in other parts of the world that eventually could break this drought for us, and that might be a month out or 2 months out?
Yeah, if you look at, there's discussion that El Nino will return at some point here, that the forecasts are kind of pointing towards that approaching, but that's more of something that's going to come in the fall time frame, so it'll be too late for us in the summer. I would say the forecast right now is the rest of July is going to be dry.
All right. Thanks so much, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey, serves as the state climatologist at the Prairie Research Institute as well. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Please do visit our website at willag.org. We'll have the Commodity Week program posted up there probably by about 4:15 to 4:30 this afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.